Ross Bowman Podcast.
You better listen.
Welcome back to the Ross Bowlin Podcast, presented by Bowlin Media. I am Ross Bowlin, here with Cade Orris. Cade, say hello to the listeners.
Hello, listeners.
I'm just realizing the shirt I'm wearing smells musty as hell right now.
I was wondering what that smell was, because I knew it wasn't me, so...
Can you actually smell it?
No.
I hope not. But it's like, it's potent because it's on my body. But you know when you do laundry, but then you forget to move the clothes from the washer to the dryer in a timely fashion, and your threads end up smelling musty as hell?
Happens all too frequently for me.
That's what I've got going on today, and I didn't realize it until I sat down. And I'm not happy about it. Now I have to walk around all day smelling this mustiness, and it's extremely upsetting.
Did you recognize this, like, while you're in the car on the way here, or is it like you're at home and you're just like, fuck it, it's too late, I'm not gonna throw on another shirt?
In the car on the way here.
Okay. Do you not have other shirts here that you could have thrown on, or you're just...
I'm kind of committed to this look, you know?
Okay, gotcha.
I don't want to change it up.
And you don't, when you do leave your clothes in the washer for too long, you don't like run it again and then like a little 15-minute rinse and spin?
Oh, if I notice that I've made this mistake, I most definitely do. I mean, the most fucked up part of this travesty, Cade, is that I hung dry this shirt. Like, mm-hmm. I hang dried it. But for some reason, I guess based on the humidity in my house that day, it did not dry in a timely fashion. And thus, my scent today is Elon Musk.
Ha-ha!
Anyway, we're back after a long hiatus due to the Thanksgiving break. Cade, did you give thanks?
I did give thanks. I ate a lot of food.
Yeah.
And I ran a 5K hungover. It was great.
You actually did it. You ran the 5K.
I did. Yeah, I ran the whole thing.
Wow.
The whole darn thing.
How'd your legs feel the next day?
Not great.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, a little sore.
Have you recovered since?
Yeah, then I ran another 5K last night for Run Club. So, just...
A lot of running.
A lot of running. I'm a runner now. Never would have thought that.
I feel like it's a part of every ex-athlete's life that you transition into and out of at some point.
Yeah.
I used to do it a lot. Talked about it on this show back in the day when I used to do it a lot.
Got to get that one endorphin, you know?
Yep. Got to chase it.
Yeah. We're literally chasing it. Yeah.
Chase it down, beat it into submission, stuff it into your brain. Speaking of giving thanks, I'm thankful to everyone who has shared the podcast on this Spotify Wrapped week. It means a lot to us when you share the show with those you know, friends and family. It really helps us grow more than anything we can do marketing-wise. Keep sharing RBP with those in need, and good podcast karma will come your way, I assure you. Now, like every other directionless podcast on the planet, we will spend the rest of this episode discussing our own personal Spotify Wrapped results for the year 2024. I'm kidding. Don't turn the show off. We're not doing that. Nobody cares that Drake is in both Cade and I's top five for the 10th consecutive year, and we're both ashamed of it. I do want to start today's show by talking about music, though, as there is huge non-Taylor Swift-related news in the music world. Famed rapper and musician Andre 3000, a.k.a. Three Stacks, a.k.a. Andre Benjamin, dropped his first solo album and first new album in 17 years, which would be a much, much bigger deal if it wasn't, lacking a single lyric and entirely flute-based. For those of you who are unfamiliar, Andre 3000 makes up half of the most famous, critically acclaimed, and successful rap duo in history, known as Outkast. Cade, what's your familiarity level with Outkast like?
I'm pretty familiar with them. Granted, I was a child when, you know, they're probably their most popular. like I was six when we dropped,
Stankonia?
No, it was the one after that.
The one with Hey Ya?
Yeah, the double album.
Oh, The Love Below and whatever the other half of that was?
Yeah, that one. Yeah. So I was six when that dropped, so I wasn't really like bumping Outkast and The Whip, but I know like a lot of their popular songs.
Yeah, I guess 17 years ago you were nine.
Yeah.
The last time that Andre 3000 put out new music himself.
Yeah, it's been a while. I would say International Players Anthem is probably my favorite, even though that's technically a feature. That song always goes.
No, that counts.
Yeah.
That counts as an Outkast song. No disrespect to UGK.
Yeah. And then in high school, after a football game that we won, we would play Roses in the locker room after every game.
That's a bop.
Yeah, you know, we get all the players and some of the coaches would dance, you know, how you see in the locker room videos in college, you know, coaches are dancing. And
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah,
it's always
sometimes
a great time.
The owners. I saw Jim Irsay doing that the other week.
Oh, yeah, no, he's probably on some stuff when he was doing that. But
his
yeah.
moves were questionable at best. And we'll talk more about him later in today's show.
Yeah.
Colts owner, Jim Irsay. But okay, so you're obviously aware of them, and yeah, dude, International Players Anthem, probably my all-around favorite song that Outkast is on. Do they both have verses on that? Andre and Big Boy?
I would assume so. I know Andre starts it off. And
I'm pretty
sure
they both do, because they're both in the music video. Also one of the greatest rap music videos ever. Just all-around good stuff there. Well, Outkast is one of the acts... I would say most responsible for introducing me to and making me fall in love with hip hop. I still remember vividly, and this is a weird, like, I don't have that many specific memories before like 14 years old, right? Like, you know, you remember some stuff from when you're a kid, but like the older you get, the harder it is to remember.
Yeah.
And there's like little things here and there that are pretty vivid still, but this is a vivid memory I have of listening to I'm Sorry, Miss Jackson, or I guess just it's Miss Jackson, on my middle school principal's computer in sixth or seventh grade. Shout out to Mrs. Chisholm, the GOAT at St. Francis Episcopal, because she let me jam Stankonia, Outkast's fourth album that dropped in the year 2000, when I was in her office for some reason. And
you
from
weren't
that,
like in trouble or anything?
I don't think so. I feel like I was like waiting for my parents to pick me up or something for like a dentist or a doctor appointment. I can't really recall the circumstances, but it was just me and her in the office. And she was like, do you want to play some music? And I was like, fucking right, I do. And I made her listen to Miss Jackson with me. So Outkast played a big part in shaping my taste in music, and Andre 3000's lyrical ability, production, and overall style were a big part of that. No disrespect to Big Boy, the other half of Outkast, but Andre was always like the face guy to me personally. And over the last 17 years, Andre will occasionally step in and do a verse on someone else's song, like a, you know, a feature, like Kanye West's Life of the Party, or Frank Ocean's Solo, or Killer Mike's Scientists and Engineers, or Young Jeezy's I Do, or John Legend's Greenlight. Those are several of my favorite all-time Andre appearances.
And Solo, that's like, it's not the actual Solo song. It's like the, I think he called it like a reprise or something.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. But he'll come in and do one of these features and remind everyone that he's one of the greatest lyricists of all time. So hip-hop has been begging for him to return with an album, and he shocked the world a couple weeks back when he announced he'd be dropping a new album after 17 years off, and hip-hop fans were heartbroken when he revealed it would be totally devoid of bars. I'll read you some from Wikipedia. It says, in the years leading up to the release of New Blue Sun, which is the title of the album, Benjamin made media appearances playing flute in public settings. This was especially amplified online by his appearance as a flutist on the score for the 2022 film Everything Everywhere All at Once. I had no idea he played the flute for some of the score in that movie. Great movie.
He also said that he's been like recording like secret like flute credits for like mainstream artists, like popular like artists, and like, but he didn't say who it was.
Just uncredited. Yeah. He's just been doing the flute, man. And there've been pictures of him popping up. Like, he's basically walking around with this flute wherever he goes for a while now. And people would get pictures of Andre 3000 just carrying this big like souped up flute, I would say. This is not like the flute you're imagining in your head.
Yeah. This isn't like what you're playing in middle school, playing like hot cross buns.
No, that's a recorder. This is a this is a substantial flute, though. And Wikipedia says he would later meet with jazz musician Carlos Nino in Los Angeles, where the two agreed to create a studio album. Ahead of its announcement, fellow rapper Killer Mike teased an impending release by Andre 3000, because Andre was featured on Scientists and Engineers on Killer Mike's album that dropped this year, which should win Album of the Year at the Grammys, or Rap Album of the Year, even though I'm sure it won't. But it's an 87-minute album largely consisting of experimental flute music with both acoustic and electronic instrumentation influenced by spiritual jazz musicians and minimalist composers. It features a myriad of different flutes performed by Benjamin in various styles across 8 instrumental pieces. And when announcing the album on November 14th, 2023, so a couple weeks back, Benjamin emphasized that the project is not a rap record, with the packaging displaying a lighthearted disclaimer that it contains, quote, no bars. He has additionally dismissed rumors that he was sitting around on rap albums that he has been characterized as refusing to release, saying instead that he felt more comfortable with the direction indicated by New Blue Sun. And if you've listened to this thing, it's like the music they play in yoga class, when the class is like over and you're just winding down, laying on your mat, like reflecting on the work you've just done. It's the music you they play when you're getting a massage, or when you're riding in an elevator, or that monks play when they meditate. It's all very confusing. And it's a little outrageous that after 17 years, this is what we got from Three Stacks in his return to releasing music. But the song titles on New Blue Sun are really the most outrageous thing about this very chill album. So I'm going to run you through these, okay? Like, when you go and pull it up on Spotify, these are the titles of the tracks.
They're extremely long. Like, there's not, like, one short title. It's not, like, two words or anything.
The shortest one is 6 words, I think. Like, to open things up, track number one is titled, I Swear, I Really Wanted to Make a Rap Album, But This Is Literally the Way the Wind Blew Me This Time. That's the track. And
just letting people, everyone know up front that, like, this is not going to be a rap album.
Yeah, and
like,
then you...
So sorry about that.
You get into it, and, like, the flute... I don't want to... I'm not, like, putting it down, but it's pretty basic on a lot of these tracks. Like, he's like... It's not, like, as intricate and insane as you might expect. But overall, I mean, it sounds good. It's not that it doesn't sound good. It's just, like... The flute part of it kind of makes you laugh sometimes, yeah. by accident, I feel like.
Do you think he'll ever drop a rap album again, or is he?
No,
just...
I think this is a pretty good indicator that that's over. That phase of his life is gone.
You think he's just like done with rap in general?
He did some interviews leading up to this release where he talked about, like, I mean, in some ways he was like putting down older rappers. Like, he was like, "What are you going to rap about?" Like, I had to get a colonoscopy last week. Like.
Which I mean, I don't. If you have bars about getting a colonoscopy, like
absolutely, I don't agree with that point he's trying to make, that like rap can only be about a certain part of your life when you're like hustling in the streets or like living the baller life in the club or with the cars or the girls. Like, I don't agree with that. But for him, that's what it was, and like it sounds like he's just done with it altogether. Which I get it. I respect it. It's his life. He's the artist. He gets to do what he wants. But in general, he did seem to be kind of like putting down dudes like, you know, that are a little older, like Hove, Kanye,
Nas.
Like, Drake is 37, man. Like,
yeah, Future's like 40, and
he's still fucking still doing it. Songs about the same shit. Like, same thing with Pusha T, right? Like, every album he's put out is about pushing coke. I mean, we all know it's been probably at least a decade or two since that man moved drugs for a living. So, I get it in some aspect, but in general, like, I was just kind of bummed out by his stance on that. Like, basically, that you can't be a rapper beyond a certain age or a certain phase of life. Track number two, perhaps my favorite title, is called... The slang word pussy rolls off the tongue with far better ease than the proper word vagina. Do you agree?
I would agree with that statement, yeah, 100%. I Googled, like, different slang words for vagina, and pussy just was the best one by far.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is an accurate statement. I don't know why he made it the title of the song. It just flew.
Gentleman Pussy was on his mind, I guess.
I guess, but it just bizarre. So the third track is called "That Night in Hawaii When I Turned Into a Panther and Started Making These Low Register Purring Tones That I Couldn't Control. Shit Was Wild."
I need whatever drugs he was on that night in Hawaii.
Definitely get the feeling he's into hallucinogens at this stage of his life.
You know, I'm just, me and the boys are trying to turn to panthers and start making low register purring tones that we can't control. And then and instead of like spelling shit, S-H-I-T,
right,
he does that weird little Y with like the two...
The bars well, through
the
it?
The bars, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what's up with that.
Yeah, he didn't put the word pussy either. It's P... parentheses star in parentheses SSY.
Because it kind of looks like a pussy, maybe?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, I think the star might represent the clitoris.
Yeah. Oh.
But,
oh, that's where it is.
It's just the little man in the boat. The fourth track is called "Bipolar Disorder's Daughter Wears a 3000 button down embroidered."
Is that about Kanye?
I have no.
Like Kanye's daughter? Because, I mean, does. A bipolar disorder.
No idea.
That's kind of where
it's
my...
bipolar disorder spelled B-U-Y. Bipolo disorder, excuse me. That's what it said. It's,
and Kanye did rock a lot of polo back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, I
and
don't know.
He does
know.
Have a daughter, and when I don't know what the 3000 button-down embroidered is.
I guess Andre 3000, maybe he made some button-downs embroidered? Who Kanye, I'm not going to sit here and pretend to be able to translate these tracks, track titles for anybody. And again, a lot of the humor in this for me is that like the song titles are so outrageous, but they all sound exactly the same. Like he's just fucking doing the flute. It and then naming the songs. The next one is 93 Till Infinity and Beyonce.
93 Till Infinity and Buzz Lightyear.
Yeah, it's
and
like
Beyonce.
Buzz Lightyear vibe reference. For sure, Infinity and Beyond. He also had to clear this track title with Beyonce and Jay-Z. Apparently he like called up Hove to ask him. Can you imagine getting that phone call, by the way, if you're Jay-Z? Hey man, I've been working on this flute-based album. It's gonna come out next week. Anyway, one of the songs is titled 93 Till Infinity and Beyonce, so I wanted to make sure you guys were cool with me using Bey's name. So I'm sorry, did you say fucking flutes?
Flute album? What?
Like, what? But people who know this guy probably wasn't all that shocking, honestly.
Yeah, no, he's been doing the flute for a while, so.
And he's just a weird cat.
Yeah.
Like, he was a weird cat back when he was doing straight rap. I mean, his style, like, influenced a lot of what you see these days. Like, it went away from, like, just straight up streetwear, urban wear, to, like, much more eccentric shit. That's largely Andre 3000's doing. Like, he was the first dude to be like, you know what? I don't give a fuck. I'm going to wear whatever I want.
Was he, like, wearing a dress and stuff?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah,
dress, weird suspenders, crazy fucking hats. Craziest hats you've ever seen in your life. Next track is titled "Gandhi, Dalai Lama, Your Lord and Savior JC, / Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer, and John Wayne Gacy."
JC, that's John Cena, right?
Yeah, yeah,
okay,
of course.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
When I saw on Spotify, it like wouldn't show you the full track name.
Because it doesn't fit.
Yeah, and so when I was reading it the first time, it cut off after John Wayne, so I thought
yeah,
he was just grouping in John Wayne with Bundy and Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah, I don't think John Wayne was that bad of a dude.
Yeah, just a little racist probably, but like wasn't killing people.
Funny walk.
Yeah,
but all around big John Wayne guy here.
Yeah, so
grew up
watching
that
really
Westerns.
Threw me off at first. I was like, what is he doing in this
what did
list?
John Wayne do to deserve this
yeah.
list? Yeah, but I don't know, there's some kind of comparison going on here, or you know, opposites type of situation. Anyway, next track is titled "Ants to You, Gods to Who." Deep.
Very deep.
Very deep.
It was definitely high when you thought of that one.
Deep flute shit there.
Because I mean, I think about that all the time. And now I see ants, I'm like, what do they think about us? Like, we are just like giants,
I mean,
compared to them.
Yeah.
Like, are we their gods? You think they're like,
I don't know, dude. It's fucked up. It's like when you're a little kid, and I look at my son sometimes, and he's so small, and he looks up at me like, holy shit, you're gigantic.
Yeah.
And then you grow up, and things aren't normal, like nearly as large as you thought. They're like, your childhood home feels huge when you're a toddler. And you grow up, and you're like, oh, this is a very normal one-story house. I think the same thing about bugs. This is why I try to free them as often as I can. When I was younger, a less sensitive man, I would just smash out any bug in my house. And granted, I still do this with roaches. They don't get a pass.
Yeah.
But like scorpions, worms, ants, roly-polies, as I call them, I'm getting them on a piece of paper and freeing them outside.
Scorpions? You're freeing the scorpions?
Sometimes I kill the scorpions.
Actually, I don't even know how to. I would kind of just like probably move out of the house if.
I mean, I
that
fling them over the back, you know, and like if it's a more dangerous bug, like I have freed a scorpion or two.
Yeah,
I fling them over my back fence into the forest.
Yeah, spiders don't get a pass for me. But like, yeah, other
depends
insects,
on the spider.
Other insects, I'll just leave them be. They're not bothering me, so
they've got a job to do. Yeah. We all do, you know. Mm-hmm. Last track is called Dreams once buried beneath the dungeon floor slowly sprout into undying gardens.
Heard this one was about a big baby duck that got its head stuck in a stewed tomato.
What the fuck? This man was 100% on mushrooms when he made all these song titles. There's no doubt in my mind, though.
Oh, for sure.
No
sober person is coming up with these song titles.
Not just sober. Like, this isn't the result of, like, alcohol. You don't have a few drinks and suddenly say, ants to who, to you, gods to who. Like, this is the work of powerful hallucinogenic medicine, in my opinion. Anyway, those are the titles. All things considered, it's not a bad listen if you're just trying to relax or meditate, or like you're at work and you just need something to put on in the background, you know, while you get your shit done. It's good for that.
Probably something to fall asleep to.
Absolutely.
No, just play the whole album, and then at the end of the year, Andre 3000 is going to be your top artist on Spotify Wrapped.
Dude, so like I play this album called Chakra Healing Frequencies, Solveggio Chakras, every night when I go to sleep, from Miracle Tones, if you want to look it up. And as a result, it buttfucks my Spotify Wrapped every single year. This is like year three of it doing this. But New Blue Sun has replaced that. I'm throwing this on at night.
Yeah, you have to.
It's beautiful music to sleep to. It's very relaxing. So respect to Andre 3000. This is still a very, really random album. Really, really random song titles.
Yeah. I haven't listened to it yet, but that's mostly because I've been jamming his Gillette Style soundtrack from 2012.
Gillette Style.
Yeah.
What is that?
I don't know. I went through his Spotify just to see like what he dropped recently. And his like last album was from 2012, and it's like with Gillette, and he's just like
Gillette Fusion Pro Glide.
Yeah. And he's just like talking over like a beat. And I don't even know what he's talking about. He's talking about like different bands and artists and stuff, and maybe okay. Like how he styles his goatee. I don't know.
Okay. I don't think that counts as an official release. That's just a marketing gimmick with Gillette. I hope they gave him a large bag.
Oh, I'm sure they did, yeah.
For that.
And I'm probably not going to listen to it, to be honest, but I'm sure I'll hear it.
Do you listen to music when you go to sleep?
No, I throw something on TV.
Yeah.
But maybe one day it's probably better for me if I play some flute music instead of watching whatever.
See, I'll put on like Lord of the Rings and then turn the volume down to like a level you can't hear it at with subtitles on, and then throw on this New Blue Sun.
Okay, yeah.
That's my vibe.
Yeah.
That's what relaxes
me. But I'm sure like this is going to get sampled so much. Like I think Drake and West Side Gun have already like gone through the whole album and sampled every song.
Yeah. It's entirely possible. Yeah. But still glad the dude is back. It's nice to see him around. He's just like all around like a genius level artist. There's not that many of them that you're like when they talk, you just know like, oh, that guy understands art at a level that very, very few people have ever. And as random as it may be, I still appreciate it. So good to have Three Stacks back in the most unpredictable way possible. Keeping momentum with my fitness and workout routine can be extremely difficult when I'm trying to balance work, parenting, and some semblance of a personal life. In the past, I would just do the same old workouts on chest day, the same old workouts on leg day, and pretty quickly hit a plateau where I wasn't getting any more jacked or more shredded, and that is the nightmare scenario that today's sponsor, FitBod, will help you avoid. I've been using the FitBod app for several months now, and it's legitimately awesome. I have crushed 88 workouts with FitBod this year. As of the one I did on Tuesday. And it's one of my favorite things about it is it helps you keep track. Like, this is the first year of my life I've known how many times I worked out exactly. as a result of Fitbod, but it tracks way more than just the number of times you work out. Like I said, before I started using Fitbod, I was doing the same workouts every time. I worked out for years, and that shit was just not really doing anything for my body. Fitbod is the future. It has everything you wish those other apps had. It has been one of my favorite and most positive additions to my life in 2023. Everyone knows working out is full of positives, sleeping better, looking better, and just feeling better overall. But as you get stronger, sticking to the same old routine can lead to a plateau in results. Keep your momentum going and your progress positive with Fitbod. The app creates personalized workouts based on your goals, abilities, and gym setup while helping you track and visualize your progress along the way. Fitbod provides a personalized workout plan designed for your fitness level and goals, creates custom workouts based on your goals, experience, available equipment, and more. So like if you're deciding, all right, in 2024, I'm going to join a gym, or maybe you're holding back because you don't know what to do once you get to the gym, Fitbod will tell you exactly what to do once you get to the gym. Or maybe you're like me and you work out in your garage with a select amount of equipment. That's just fine, too. It will build you a personalized workout plan regardless of if you're at a gym or if you're at home in your garage or working out in your living room with a set of weights or whatever. Fitbod workouts also improve as you do. Their powerful technology understands your strength training ability, studies your past workouts, and adapts to your available gym equipment. The app intelligently varies your intensity and volume and tracks muscle fatigue and recovery to design a well-balanced workout plan. The app keeps your gym sessions fresh and fun by mixing up your workouts with new exercises, rep schemes, supersets, and circuits. It's never been easier to get the results you've always wanted. Check out Fitbod. Get 25% off your subscription at fitbod.me/Ross. That's fitbod.me/ross. Check out Fitbod today. Now it's time for insane headlines of the day. I mentioned Colts owner Jim Irsay earlier. Kate is a Colts fan.
Go horse.
I should note.
6-5 in the wild card.
True.
Texans are in the hunt.
Yeah, we're 6-5 as well. We should be 9-1 in my opinion. Or 9-2. But from NBCSports.com, here's our first headline. Jim Irsay blames his 2014 arrest on police prejudice against white billionaires.
Well, you know, no one has it tougher in 2023 than old rich white people.
Yeah, white billionaires, man.
Old rich white guys' lives matter too, Ross.
Yeah, it's true. Here's some of the story. It says, Colts owner Jim Irsay says his 2014 arrest for driving under the influence was a result of prejudice against him for being white and rich. Quote, I am prejudiced against because I am a rich white billionaire, Irsay told Andrea Kramer on Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. Quote, if I'm just the average guy down the block, they're not pulling me in. Of course not, end quote. Which is just ironic because, like, look, Jim Irsay's got a lot of issues. I think everybody knows that. All right, the guy's been to rehab a lot. He's got a lot of substance abuse problems in his past. I don't know why he felt the need to bring up his 2014 arrest and defend it 9 years later after the fact on Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel, but here we are. It just couldn't be less accurate and less reflective of reality that he thinks like normal people just get away with whatever and billionaires.
I also don't think he's living in reality.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, he's disconnected. Way, way, way too disconnected to have any fucking idea what he's talking about. Just in case it wasn't clear, we don't necessarily agree with the things he's saying here. We're just reporting on them and laughing at them. It says, asked by Kramer how he thinks it sounds for a white billionaire to claim that he's a victim of prejudice, Irsay stood by his comment saying, quote, I don't care what it sounds like. It's the truth. You know, Andrea, I could give a damn what people think, how anything sounds or sounds like. The truth is the truth, and I know the truth. He knows the truth, kid.
Doesn't care about our opinions on the matter.
No, it's about his truth.
Yeah, he's speaking his truth.
He's living his truth.
Yeah.
Irsay pleaded guilty to operating a vehicle while intoxicated, a misdemeanor. Asked why he pleaded guilty if he had been profiled, Irsay said he just wanted to get it over with. Irsay claims that when he was asked to take a field sobriety test and looked unsteady walking, it was because he had just had hip surgery. He has admitted he had prescription painkillers and a sedative in his system at the time. He has not explained why, as a billionaire, he didn't hire someone to drive him when he was unsteady after surgery.
I love how they threw that in. As a billionaire, why are you not getting an Uber or hiring a driver?
Fuck being a billionaire. If you're worth $2 million, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Driving around intoxicated on any level, much less on a sedative and painkillers. Ridiculous. Same question I had for Tiger Woods when he got busted driving around on pills.
Like so many celebrities.
Bro, what are you fucking doing? What are you doing? Just hire a fucking driver. 40, 50K a year. Like, that's like me throwing $20 out.
Like Uber has a like premier option that's more expensive than all the other ones.
Those are for rich people.
Yeah, because you don't want to sit where the common folks have sat.
Like, you do not. Can't like, put your ass in a poor seat.
I'm poor and I'm paying the insane Uber charge prices when I go out. Like, you
just
can do the
ball?
Same. Yeah.
Yeah. Ridiculous, though. The fact that he says he was profiled and then goes on to admit that he had prescription painkillers and a sedative in his system. Contradictory statements. The police department in Carmel, Indiana, told the Indianapolis Star, quote, "We are very sorry to hear that comment about our officers and our department. We have a very professional agency consisting of officers that strive to protect our community with integrity and professionalism." The 64-year-old Irsay also told Creamer he has gone to rehab for addiction 15 times and that he once nearly died of an overdose. And look, I'm not making light of addiction, drug issues, overdosing, obviously. Those are all things that I have a very personal attachment to. But if you've been to rehab 15 times, maybe don't drive. Just maybe if you're worth billions of dollars and you have every resource at your disposal, what the fuck?
Yeah. And so they mentioned Carmel, Indiana. I'm from Indiana, and Carmel's like the town over next to mine.
Yeah.
And it is known for being like the richest and whitest town in Indiana. So Jim Irsay is not the type of person that the police are racially profiling there.
Yeah, because they're all rich.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, he's an entertaining guy. Like I said, if you've never familiarized yourself with Jim Irsay, type in Jim Irsay dancing into Google and just watch the most recent clip of him celebrating a Colts win in the locker room, and that'll tell you everything you need to know, pretty much, about dude. Yeah. Moving on. Next headline. Raunchy alcohol-fueled Taco Bell party included open sex lawsuit claims. Now, this is a weird one. From KTLA.com, a former Los Angeles area Taco Bell employee is suing the company and a franchise owner after she claims a Christmas party at the fast food restaurant descended into a drunken mess that included open sex.
Sounds like our Christmas party from last year.
It's the exact same. Elena Beckham filed her lawsuit last week in Los Angeles Superior Court. In the suit, she alleges that her supervisor invited her to the December 18th, 2022 party at the San Pedro Taco Bell at which she worked. She was encouraged to bring food for a potluck-style buffet, and her contribution was a bowl of guacamole.
Do you think someone forgot to bring something for the dinner, and so they had to go through the Taco Bell drive-thru and get a taco party pack?
Well, it sounds like they closed this thing down pretty hardcore.
They went to a different Taco Bell.
Yeah, then came back.
With the party pack. Yeah.
It says, once she arrived, Beckham, quote, discovered that her supervisor covered the windows of the restaurant with wrapping paper and, quote, also covered the cameras for the lobby and the inside of the restaurant. So really locked it down, made sure nobody could see in, and the cameras weren't able to record anything. She claims her supervisor provided alcohol to staffers, several of whom were, quote, overserved. And around midnight, after Beckham had stepped outside for a short time, my guess is for a smoke break, she walked back into the restaurant and saw a coworker, quote, having sex with his wife in front of everyone at the party, she alleges. The coworker's wife, Beckham claims, was also kissing her female manager and another female coworker at the same time. That actually sounds kind of hot. If you remove it from the Taco Bell.
Yeah.
This guy's like, banging his wife who's making out with two women.
Yeah, I'd sit there and watch. I don't know why you'd be so disgusted by that.
I mean, they may have been very disgusting people.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Taco Bell Christmas party, after all. The coworker's wife, Beckham, claimed... Oh, I already said that. Shocked, disgusted, and outraged, Beckham alleges that she first ran out of the restaurant but then went back inside to retrieve her guacamole bowl, only to find her manager and the other coworker involved in the sexual encounter were vomiting.
Mm.
All right, just to back it up for a second. She goes out, takes a smoke break or whatever, comes back in, sees an employee banging his wife who's making out with the manager and another female coworker at the same time. So she's shocked, she's disgusted, and she's outraged. She runs out of the restaurant, like, I got to get out of here. What is this? This is turning into some kind of a weird Taco Bell blood orgy that I don't want anything to do with. And then she goes, oh, but wait,
my guacamole bowl.
Can't leave the guac bowl. I have to go back in. She goes back in for the guac and finds her manager and the other coworker that were making out with the woman that was getting banged vomiting. So they were fucked and they were fucked up in there.
Yeah,
there was
alcohol, Taco Bell, and making out with your coworker's wife will tend to lead you to puke your guts out.
It will. Yeah. It says one threw up in the trash while the other vomited in her guacamole bowl. So damn, dude, she went back for the guac bowl and it was being puked into.
You think she still left with it, or she's like, you know what, you can have it.
I think she probably just left it.
Yeah.
How big was this guac bowl though? Like, how much guacamole did this woman fucking
also,
bring?
Doesn't Taco Bell have guacamole? Like,
there's just better options for places to puke too. Yeah. Good
well,
God.
I mean, the trash can was taken, so
that
was the only other option.
That's true. I mean, the bathroom, perhaps, you know. Like
maybe. Well, that's too far. You got.
When you
got
to go, you got to go. Yeah. Beckham says she reported the incident to Taco Bell Human Resources and Alvarado Restaurant Group, the Colorado-based franchisee. Imagine working in Taco Bell HR and this report comes through. This call comes in. That there was a Taco Bell franchise that threw a Christmas party that descended into open sex and vomiting in guacamole bowls. That's a tough day at the office. The manager and the other coworkers involved in the sexual encounter were fired, her complaint states. After their termination, Beckham alleges she was threatened and had her car window shattered by someone associated with her former coworkers. So they got pissed off that they got
fired from Taco Bell.
That she ratted.
Yeah.
She ratted and then she paid the price, you know? It's the hard thing about being a rat. You got to know what comes with it. And in this case, it's the loss of a window. So Taco Bell and the franchisee, quote, did nothing about these threats and instead told her that they were transferring her to a new location rather than disciplining the employees who threatened her. So they were just like, look, clearly things have gone poorly here. We're going to ship you over to a different Taco Bell. Things will be better. We promise. The Christmas party there is completely normal. Unbelievable. Beckham eventually quit and alleges that she, quote, has suffered actual, consequential, and incidental financial losses, end quote, and that Taco Bell violated anti-discrimination laws. Yeah, I would probably file this lawsuit, too, if I was her.
For sure. Yeah, this seems like a win for her.
I have a hard time imagining she's walking away with an L here. Yeah, I think she's probably going to get some
Although,
money.
Didn't they, like, block off the cameras or whatever?
Yeah, that's a lot of witnesses, though, bro. That's a lot of witnesses
and
trauma. Somebody's going to talk, you know?
Yeah, they'll flip someone.
Yeah, they always do. Mm-hmm. I've seen The Sopranos. Anyway, that's the most absurd fast food story of the year, like bar none, for sure, 100%. I'm curious as to why she... I mean, I'm not doing victim shaming here, I'm just saying... She waited till almost the next Christmas to come out and like make the story public, it sounds like.
Oh, this was
last Christmas, 2022.
Oh, wow.
Last Christmas,
I gave you my heart.
Gave you my guacamole bowl, and you puked in it. Fucking monster. Next headline, new AI app helps singles with dating by analyzing text conversations, suggesting ways to respond. This is a weird one, too. KVU.com says people are turning to artificial intelligence to give them an edge while communicating. But what are the risks? Generative AI is being incorporated into numerous aspects of our lives, school, church, and work, even when it comes to matters of the heart. The main thing that separates us from technology, we're not safe. AI consultant Ian Clark said the AI technology used on dating apps already decides your dating pool. Quote, match optimization. So that's using artificial intelligence to try to predict who will be a successful match based on the information they provide to the dating system, said Clark. And lately, it's gotten a lot deeper than that. Large language models for communication, similar to ChatGPT, but for dating, have already hit the market. Keys AI is one of them. It's a dating/texting coach. You download the app, which becomes part of your keyboard. It analyzes your conversation and gives you options on how to respond. You can choose whether to ask a question, agree, and more. Then you choose the, quote, vibe of your response, like witty or flirty, and so on. It'll give you responses to choose from, or you can tell it to generate again before you actually send that message. So it's like when you shake off the catcher as a pitcher.
Yeah,
not that one. Not that one. Give me another one.
No, I don't want one. I want two.
Yeah, there we go. There we
on
go.
The inside, yeah.
Yeah. It also will tell you who has the leverage in the conversation. So it actually informs you, like, you're losing hand here.
You're losing the fight right
you're
now.
Losing.
Yeah, we got to do something, switch up. We got to make some halftime adjustments.
Yeah, we got to regain the leverage here. You're losing the leverage. Keys AI CEO Taylor Margot said the company gained 500,000 users since launching in early 2022. She said, "Why are people so interested? I think it comes out of desperation." Just straight to the point. So when people reach for Keys AI, they're basically raising their hand and saying, "I have something I really want, which is better communication in my romantic relationships." Now, that's the end of the story, Cade. Let's discuss this. How do you feel about it? I've admittedly never used dating apps.
Right.
Passed me by. That's something your generation has had since you started dating people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't love this because I'm not a big fan of AI in general, but I also don't hate this, and I'll tell you why. It's because, like, dating apps in general can be exhausting. Like, I will spend over 30 minutes trying to come up with a clever response to a girl saying she wants to find the best fries in Austin. And then I, like, spend 30 minutes coming up with a message, and then I don't get, like, a match or a reply. I'm like, well, that just wasted my time. And then, like, also, I'm just, like, anxious as fuck and overthink when I'm sending messages in general.
Sure.
And so, especially, like, with an opener, because you want to, like,
you want to stand out,
you know, you want to, like, impress them, I guess, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so that can be, like, really daunting and exhausting. So I could see, like, using this, like, as a helpful tool or whatever, because, like, to, like, get inspiration, like, oh, I want to, like, I, like, have the idea of what I want to send, but I don't really know, like, how to word it or, like, what, like, would sound the best.
Right.
So, like, use it as, like, a tool for inspiration rather than just be like, oh, I'm going to just let the AI come up with this message, send to them, and just, like, use AI to, like, have a conversation with the person.
Yeah, but that's what the bulk of these people are going to do, for sure.
Yeah.
And then the problem becomes, even if you do use this AI tool to, like, impress somebody into going on an actual real-life human date with you, then what? You don't know what the fuck to say, because you were using AI to have your whole conversation. Now you don't even know how to have a fucking conversation with somebody. It's like, what are you going to wear? It's like, you know, there's been sketches and shit like that where you wear an earpiece and then you go into a date and somebody's feeding you what to say. But still, it's not you.
Right.
So it's problematic because long-term, you're still not developing the social skills or relationship skills to maintain. Like, I understand as a concept, but it just feels like. For also, you've just got fucking AI, some random computer program, scanning all of your conversations is creepy.
That is a little weird. But, like, I don't, like, when I go on dates, like, I don't have trouble with, like, coming up with stuff to say. It's just, like, when I'm online.
Yeah.
Because, like, if I, like, try to be sarcastic or something, they might not.
It can always come off wrong.
Yeah. So, like, everything I say online can be viewed differently. But, like, if I'm in person and they can see that, like, I'm being sarcastic or witty or whatever.
Yeah.
Then it comes off differently.
All I want to know is if this thing can sext.
I'm sure it could.
Like, does it have the sexual riz needed to have a full-blown cyber sex conversation on my behalf? That's what I'm curious about.
But also, South Park did an episode about this. It was more just like about, like,
no, of course they did.
Stan had a girlfriend and he didn't want to text her anymore. So he's just like, one of his friends was like, "Hey, just use ChatGPT and just put
plug
in her message and then I'll give you something to say." And then he just, like,
copy paste.
Yep. And that's the whole episode. So yeah, it's not great. But again, like, I don't really, like, hate this as, like, again, just like,
as a concept?
Yeah. Or just like, no, come up with the ideas for something to say, I guess. At least for me, like, I could see myself using it, but, like, I won't. I'm not even on the apps right now.
Sad. Very unfair.
I know. Well, you know, I have to work on myself.
Yeah.
I have to love myself before I can love someone else.
That's very true.
Yeah.
It's very
true. That's what they all say, I guess, right?
I don't know. Not all of them.
Not all of them?
No. Okay. There's a lot of really stupid people out there.
Yeah.
And sick, and that's why we're all in therapy. Anyway, funny story, the AI thing. The dating apps are already, like, a degree removed from personal.
Yeah, and they're already using, like, AI to, like, determine.
Match you up and shit. And now on top of that, we're like, all right, well, I also need a computer to tell me what to say. and how to say it.
Yeah.
It's just a bizarre world we're living in. Next and final headline. Texas woman receives lifetime ban from Carnival Cruises after bringing CBD gummies on board. Perhaps the lamest reason to be banned from anything ever.
Yeah, I guess people aren't allowed to have fun on cruises anymore.
Guess not. People.com says a Texas woman received a lifetime ban on Carnival Cruise Line after CBD gummies were found in her luggage during boarding. Melinda Van Veldhuizen, a 42-year-old nurse practitioner and chiropractor from Dallas, Texas, was planning to celebrate her 21st wedding anniversary and her son's senior year in high school on Carnival's Horizon Cruise in August, but things did not go as planned. A frequent cruise passenger, Van Veldhuizen is, had been trying to get through security at the Port of Miami in August when she was stopped by agents after x-rays detected nail clippers in her suitcase. While searching her bag, agents found CBD gummies and pulled her aside. And the gummies were sealed, and she said that she brought them on to help her sleep, which they were advertised as doing. Quote, I have trouble sleeping, she said, so it was just to make sure I could sleep on the trip. I've always traveled with them, no problem. She told the news station that she was taken to an area away from her family where she was interrogated by security and police and had to wait for more than 2 hours before she was informed that she would not be able to board the cruise. Quote, the captain asked me several times if I had a marijuana card or if I had a diagnosis if I needed it. I said, it's CBD. That doesn't exist. It's just not a thing, she said, adding that her family also opted not to go on the cruise without her. It would have been pretty goddamn funny if her husband, whom she was celebrating 21 years of marriage with, was just like, honey, we're all going to go on without
you. Yeah, I mean, we're here right now, so we're just going to hop on the cruise. We'll see you at home.
It's Kevin's senior year of high school. We have to go. You take your CBD gummies back to the house and enjoy the sleep. That would have been good stuff, but no, so they all didn't go. Soon after, she received a letter from Carnival saying that she was banned from all future cruises with the company. This letter, which she shared with WPLG and the Washington Post, stated, quote, this decision was based on your actions on the current cruise, which were in violation of ship rules, interfered with the safety and or enjoyment of other guests on the ship, or caused harm to Carnival. Fucking, this does not make me want to go on a Carnival cruise, bro.
Yeah, I was about to ask, like, have you ever been on one? Or
no, never been on a cruise. I'm a staunch anti-cruise advocate.
Yeah.
This is why. It's one thing or another, man. You're either getting tossed off the cruise because you had some fucking gummy worms or some CBD on you, or the cruise ship fills with human feces and pee-pee because the toilets overflow.
Yeah, or
you get stuck at sea.
Or you run into an iceberg.
Or you hit an iceberg, or you're thrown overboard and they never solve your murder. There's a lot of bad shit that happens on cruises.
Yeah, I don't want to be stranded in the middle of an ocean.
No, frankly, everyone on the cruise ship should have CBD.
Yeah.
But instead, you're banned for life if you get caught with some CBD gummies.
And you know there's people that brought worse shit on there.
Absolutely, 100%. 100%.
People are, you know, sticking eight balls up their two-hole, sneaking
absolutely.
It in.
Absolutely. All the time.
All the time. Yeah.
All the time. We know that. All the time. Anyway, poor lady.
But
21st wedding anniversary celebration and son being a senior in high school celebration destroyed by CBD gummies.
Yeah, and they were in the article, they were saying like it was viewed as a controlled substance.
Yeah.
And then like the next paragraph, they say it's no longer a controlled substance in like 2018. So a little off on that. Like I can go to the gas station down the street and buy CBD gummies. You know, they're
they're everywhere.
They're right next to the dick pills and Zen pouches.
Yes.
So.
And then like 40 different brands of it too. It's
fucking
everywhere.
And there's so many variations now. Like we had a, I guess, former sponsor that sent us some CBD gummies and they have like CBD, CBA, CBN, the whole fucking alphabet.
There's a gamut, a bunch of different shit. Yeah. I don't even know what half of it means.
No idea.
Craziness. Craziness. But no, we all know though, if you're going to do a Carnival cruise out of the Port of Miami, don't take nail clippers.
Yeah,
if you take the nail clippers, they'll find your CBD sleep gummies.
Yeah, that's what fucked it for the goddamn nail clippers.
Shouldn't have been clipping her nails, dude. Today's episode is also brought to you by Shopify. Chappelle and Neil, Key and Peele, Faye and Poehler, Setup and Punchline. So what about the perfect duo when it comes to growing your business? That's you and Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling merchandise for your podcast or handmade kaleidoscopes, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person so you can focus on successfully growing your business. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Selling merchandise for our podcast here at Bolin Media has been a massive supplemental revenue source for us and our company, allowing us to provide our biggest fans and supporters with shirts and hats and coffee mugs that they can wear and use in real life to show their support for Bolin Media. And Shopify can be the platform that enables you to connect with your supporters in the same way. I've used the Shopify platform extensively. It is amazing. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to help support you and your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/RBP, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/RBP now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. $1 per month trial period, shopify.com/RBP, all lowercase.
Grab your light. This is Stop the Wikipedia when you're high.
Today's Stuff to Wikipedia When You're High is Caterpillar Club. The Caterpillar Club is an informal association of people who have successfully used a parachute to bail out of a disabled aircraft. So after authentication by the parachute maker, applicants receive a membership certificate and a distinctive lapel pin. The nationality of the person whose life was saved by parachute and ownership of the aircraft are not factors in determining qualification for membership, it says, which makes me suspicious that indeed the nationality of the person who was saved by the parachute and ownership of the aircraft are factors. Because why the hell is that one of the first things the Wikipedia page mentions? It's bizarre. It says anybody whose life was saved by using a parachute after bailing out of a disabled aircraft is eligible to join this Caterpillar Club. The requirement that the aircraft is disabled naturally excludes parachuting enthusiasts in the normal course of a recreational jump,
so
or those involved in military training.
You
jumps.
Can't be like skydiving.
No, no.
Yeah.
It has to be that you're on an aircraft, the aircraft is going to crash, and you bail out in a parachute.
So, like, if we went on a plane and incapacitated the pilot,
right.
And
doesn't count.
The plane is going to go down, but
no, because it's your fault.
Okay, but if we hired,
you set it up.
Well, if we hired some hijackers,
I think if they found out we hired the hijackers, then we still wouldn't get in the Caterpillar Club.
But what if they don't find out?
Then we'd be solid. I think.
Okay, then we're in the club. Okay.
I think. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, it depends on if the hijackers like disabled the plane. I think if the plane gets hijacked and you're on it and it's not going down,
mm-hmm.
you still can't get into the Caterpillar Club if you jump off.
So
the plane has got to be disabled.
Okay.
Yeah, you can't bail from a hijacking and still get into the Caterpillar Club unless the plane is disabled.
But what if I'm on a plane with a group of people who are skydiving, but I don't plan on skydiving?
Yeah.
And the plane gets disabled, so now I'm forced to...
Then you're good, I think.
Then I'm good, okay.
It gives us some examples. Let me read. The Airborne Systems Company of New Jersey continues the tradition of certifying members and awarding pins to this day. So I guess the Airborne Systems Company of New Jersey is who's in charge of this Caterpillar Club. The club was founded by Leslie Irvin of the Irvin Airshoot Company of Canada in 1922. Leslie Irvin is credited with the inventing of the first free-fall parachute in 1919. The name Caterpillar Club refers to the silk threads that made the original parachutes, thus recognizing the debt owed to the silkworm, of course. Other people have taken the metaphor further by comparing the act of bailing out with that of the caterpillar letting itself down to earth by a silken thread. Another metaphor is that caterpillars have to climb out of their cocoons to escape and survive. The club's motto is, quote, "Life depends on a silken thread."
I thought butterflies come out of the cocoons. Why... Or is this talking about like
they
a
do.
Different...
But I think, have you never seen a caterpillar like slowly lowering itself from a tree to the ground with that silk thread?
No, but it says it has to climb out of the cocoon to escape and survive. That's why I'm...
I guess that's it maybe what the butterfly means as a butterfly. I don't know.
Okay.
None of this is very logical to me. It says in 1922, Leslie Irvin, the inventor of the parachute thing, agreed to give a gold pin to every person whose life was saved by one of his parachutes. At the end of the Second World War, the number of members with the Irvin pins had grown to over 34,000, though the total number of people saved by Irvin parachutes is estimated to be 100,000. So a fairly large club, the Caterpillar Club, at this point. The successor to the original Irvin Company still provides pins to people who have made a jump. In addition to the Irvin Air Chute Company, other parachute manufacturers have also issued Caterpillar pins for successful jumps. GC Parachutes formed their Gold Club in 1940. The Switlick Parachute Company of Trenton, New Jersey, issued both gold and silver Caterpillar pins. I'm wondering if there was a distinction. The Pioneer Parachute Company in Skokie, Illinois, also presented plaques to people who packed the parachutes that saved lives. I don't think you get to be in the Caterpillar Club if you're the parachute packer.
You just get a plaque.
You just get a plaque. Hmm. There are no annual fees for the Caterpillar Club, though the Switlick Club charges a nominal enrollment fee, probably for paperwork processing. You know, it's like 15 bucks or something.
And the little pen.
Yeah, the pen. Those don't come cheap, you know. Both the Irvin and Switlick Clubs issue gold and silver pins depicting caterpillars. The requirement for memberships are rigid. Members must have saved their lives by jumping with a parachute. Consequently, RAF Sergeant Nicholas Alcamede, who during the Second World War bailed out of a RAF Avro Lancaster without a parachute and landed uninjured in a snowdrift, was refused membership because a parachute had not been used. Got to have that parachute to get that pin.
Can't be landing in a snowy drift
without
a parachute
if
you want to get in the club.
Not if you want to be in the Caterpillar Club, baby. More recently, a group of 12 skydivers were denied membership when one of them fouled the plane's tail and caused it to fall from the sky. He died in the crash, but the other 11 people parachuted to safety. They did not qualify because it had been their original intention to jump from the plane. So if you originally intend on jumping, even if the plane goes down, you don't get into the Caterpillar Club. Also, who the fuck survives a situation like that and then goes, well, Danny's dead, but hell, in his memory, let's all go get caterpillar pins.
Yeah, it kind of seemed like it was his idea to like, hey, let's like take this plane down so we can join the Caterpillar Club.
And then he died.
He died.
And they were like, we got to do it for Danny.
And then they didn't get
admitted. And then the Caterpillar Club was like, sorry, your boy fucked you.
Yeah.
You guys intended on jumping just because he fouled the plane's tail. How did he do that, by the way? How do you foul a tail?
No idea.
It says the pilot, however, was admitted to the club.
Because he wasn't planning on jumping.
Oh, man. Damn, that is rigid.
Yeah.
Very specific. And that's the Caterpillar Club. Hydration is not just for athletes. Podcasters need to stay hydrated, too, so we avoid dry mouth during the heat of battle while recording a show. Without today's sponsor, Liquid IV, Cade and I could be suffering from dehydration right now with dry-ass mouths that sound terrible on a microphone. No matter where or how you are hydrating this season, Liquid IV is the hydration brand fueling your well-being, and their hydration multiplier can keep you going through the end of the year and beyond. With 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, Liquid IV hydrates 2 times faster than water alone, all in a single stick, and now it's available in sugar-free. Choose from 3 different flavors, the delicious white peach, green grape, and lemon lime, if you're going with the sugar-free. We have a massive supply of Liquid IV here at the Bolin Media office, which makes us perhaps the most hydrated media company in the entire world. And Liquid IV has been one of our longest-running sponsors, supporting your favorite Bolin Media shows for years now. We love Liquid IV, and 1 stick of Liquid IV in 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone, with 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, no artificial sweeteners, and zero sugar. Contains 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, non-GMO and free from gluten, dairy, and soy. They replace the sugar with a proprietary amino acid, allulose blend. Allulose is a naturally occurring sweetener with the same sweet taste and texture one can expect from table sugar. Grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or you can get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code ROSS at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code ROSS at liquidiv.com. For our final segment of the day, Rolling Stone, last week, I believe it was, put out a ranking of all of 60, all 62 of Disney's animated movies. Okay, so Disney, since it started, has done 62 animated movies. Rolling Stone ranked them. And I wanted to discuss Rolling Stone's top 10. We're not going to go through all 62, but their top 10, and then share our own personal Disney top 10s as well. I, as you will see, largely don't agree with their list in the way that they...
Yeah, their list is kind of bullshit.
Which is not that shocking.
Yeah.
I feel like Rolling Stone does these ranking things to, like, stir up controversy.
Because
at least once a year, I see, like, Rolling Stone ranked the top 25 rappers, and they put, like, Cardi B at number 4, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, what are we doing here?
Come on, this is a joke, right?
You just want some clicks.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like it's all just in the name of clickbait, but... So here's their top 10, and I'm not saying their top 10 is terrible. It's just like, by and large, I don't agree with it. Their number 10 is Beauty and the Beast. Came out in 1991. Number 9, The Great Mouse Detective, 1986. That one I love.
Never seen it.
Oh, Cade.
Am I missing out?
You gotta smoke a little Doja and watch The Great Mouse Detective, dude. It's fantastic.
Well, maybe I'll put it on tonight. Maybe. On Disney Plus, yeah.
Their number 8 is Tarzan, which came out in 1999. Perhaps... the all-around greatest soundtrack of any animated Disney movie.
Easily.
Thanks to Phil Collins.
Yeah.
You'll Be in My Heart, dude. That goes so, so very hard. They put Winnie the Pooh from 2011 as their number 7. That alone should just disqualify their entire list. No disrespect to Winnie the Pooh. Or Eeyore. Or Rabbit.
Or Tigger.
Or any of the boys.
Piglet, yeah.
Piglet. But that... 2011 Winnie the Pooh movie, which I have seen probably 40 fucking times at this point, thanks to my 4-year-old at home, is not in the top 10 Disney animated movies of all time. That's insane. Their number 6 is 101 Dalmatians from 1961, which I'm not going to shit on because compared to the decision to put Winnie the Pooh in there or their number 5 is not that big of a deal. Their number 5 is The Emperor's New Groove from the year 2000. I don't even remember this. Like, I remember there's a llama. Doesn't he get turned into a llama?
Yeah. He was supposed to be poisoned, but he got turned into a llama instead.
That's a common occurrence.
Yeah. Classic mix-up.
Yep, classic mix-up there between the poison and the llama transformation juice. But to put that in the top 5, bro, Emperor's New Groove, dude. David Spade is the voice of one of the characters.
Yeah, he's the main character.
I fucking love David Spade, but it's actually the reason I found this list, because I follow David Spade on Instagram. I love David Spade, and he was bragging about it. He was like, look, Emperor's New Groove made number 5 on this Rolling Stone list, and I was like, what the fuck? Emperor's New Groove? I could see it being in the top 20 or something, but like number 5? Whoever made the list really fucking identified with that llama. Number 4 is Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs from 1937.
Seven drawers.
But again, I don't hate on Snow White. I got nothing bad to say about Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs or drawers, even though it's a weird ass movie and just in general a weird premise. It's not number 4. I'm fucking sorry. It's not top 10. There's no way. Little Mermaid at number 3, I won't say anything bad about. 1989, that's fine. Pinocchio, number 2. 1940. And then Bambi, number 1, 1942. I don't know. I feel like they just threw like two of the most famous and notable in there at 1 and 2. Bambi, bro, is like...
It's so sad.
It starts off with a horrific murder of the Bambi's mother. Like, it just... I don't know, man. I don't even remember the plot from there on out.
Yeah, all I know is the
Bambi's mom
died.
Gets capped.
Yeah.
Point blank, dude. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, that's their list. Like I said, I don't agree with it, and you'll see that when I compare it to mine. Now, I will say this. My number 10 is also Beauty and the Beast, same as their number 10. 1991's Beauty and the Beast. I've watched this movie probably 200 times in my life. I love Beauty and the Beast. It's great. It's wildly entertaining. Belle is a great character. All the household appliances and objects that come to life are great characters. The Beast is a great character. Gaston is the best bad guy in the history of Disney movies. He's ridiculous. And so, yeah, Beauty and the Beast is my number 10. My number 9 is Mulan from 1998. This was number 18 on Rolling Stone's list, I would add, Mulan. I'll Make a Man Out of You is one of the best Mulan. It's
banger.
One of the best Disney songs ever made. I did not watch their fucking live action version
Absolutely
of this.
Not.
I never ever will.
They didn't have the little dragon. They didn't have Eddie Murphy in
Gotta
there.
Gotta have Mushu, dude.
Yeah.
Gotta have Mushu. Great character. Eddie Murphy, by the way. Also, the donkey in Shrek.
Yeah.
One of the great animated voices that gets not enough respect, in
For
my
sure.
opinion. My number eight is Hercules from 1997. It was number 36 on Rolling Stone's list. Hercules is all time. Another great, great soundtrack and just a very entertaining story through and through with a whole bunch of great life lessons and lessons about family and love.
Learning about Greek mythology.
And
too.
Greek mythology as well, Cade. Great point. It's fantastically educational. Number seven for me is The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Came out in 1996. It was number 28 on Rolling Stone's list. And mine are mostly based on music now, I'm realizing, but like great, great, great songs. Kind of weird because his boys are gargoyles.
Yeah, the dude on the that made the list was shitting on the gargoyles. He's like, these dudes are not funny at all. Like,
Damn.
They ruined the movie.
What
I was
the
like,
fuck?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck him.
Yeah.
Fuck him. The gargoyles are fine. They're just fine. Great movie, though. Love that one. A lot of the same reasons I just said about Hercules. Minus the Greek mythology. Number six for me is Peter Pan, 1953. It was number 34 on Rolling Stone's list. This is just one of the classics for me. It's one of the Disney classics. It's one of the best. One of the GOATs.
Then he puts that 34 because of the Red Man song.
Yeah, which is wildly offensive in fairness.
Yeah, fair. But then he also has like Sleeping Beauty and The Little Mermaid up there. And they, you know.
Look, I'll say this. We just had Thanksgiving and... a lot has changed from when I was a little kid celebrating Thanksgiving to as an adult celebrating Thanksgiving. And I'm not trying to get all woke on everybody here or whatever, but like my appreciation and understanding for what the Native Americans went through when the Europeans came here and essentially conquered this country is a lot different than it was when I was a kid. And Peter Pan hits a lot different than it did when I was a kid as a result, because there is that one scene with the Red Man song that is you're watching it just like, what the fuck were they doing here? Like, why? Before the movie starts, a disclaimer pops up that tells you, basically, hey, there's a bunch of really offensive shit in this film, and we've left it in here in hopes that people will be better educated moving forward.
Yeah.
Which I'm glad they didn't fuck with it. Like, I don't like changing art.
Yeah, didn't it completely.
Yeah, because there's a lot of art from the past and movies and TV shows that like have offensive stuff in it that needs to be in there so that we can recognize the difference between what was acceptable then and what's acceptable now.
Yeah.
That being said, Peter Pan is still one of my all-time favorites, and it lands at number six. My top five reads like this. Robin Hood from 1973, which was 55 on Rolling Stone's list. That's in the last 10. I fucking love Robin Hood. 1973's Robin Hood, one of my all-time favorites. Number four for me is The Great Mouse Detective from 1986. It came out the year before I was born. I still watch it to this day. I'll throw it on like once a year. The Great Mouse Detective. Have you seen this one?
You just asked me that earlier.
Oh, yeah. We already said you need to watch it tonight.
Yeah.
My number three is The Sword and the Stone. It was number 52 on Rolling Stone's list. That's wildly, wildly disrespectful to one of the all-time great Disney films. Have you seen The Sword and the Stone?
Haven't seen that one either.
Same exact reasoning as The Great Mouse Detective.
Okay, so I just got to do those back-to-back tonight.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but just, you know, get real high.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. There's no question about that.
Yeah. My number two is The Lion King from 1994. It was number 17 on Rolling Stone's list. The Lion King not being in their top 10 is offensive. As offensive as that song from Peter Pan.
Yeah, I was very shocked when I saw Lion King at 17. I was
17?
Like, that makes no sense.
Fucking
I feel like that
Lion
should be like
King, bro.
In everyone's top five.
Hakuna Matata, dude. Come on. And my number one is Aladdin.
Love that.
I felt like a street rat as a kid, and I really identified with Aladdin. And also, Jasmine is the hottest Disney princess ever. There is no close
Facts,
second.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not even, yeah. Was number 13 on Rolling Stone's list. So, yeah. A lot of mine that are in my top 10 did not even make their top 20 or their top 10, and in some cases not in their top 50. So fuck Rolling Stone.
Mm-hmm.
My list is the definitive top 10 Disney list. Also, I'll throw in a couple honorable mentions. The Fox and the Hound from 1981 can't be on my top 10 list because it's one of the most depressing and heartbreaking things I've ever seen. You would have to chain me down to a chair and force me to watch this movie at this point in life. There is no way. If my kids ever ask to watch it, I will burn the streaming platform. I guess you can't set fire to your... Back in the day, it was like a VHS or a DVD. I could burn that.
Yeah,
now I'm just...
Go outside and just like bash it with a hammer or something.
I got to do
yeah.
parental controls now, yeah. I guess, and delete it from the database. also, Tarzan definitely deserves an honorable mention. I respect that being in their top 10.
Yeah.
Phil Collins is the man. And then I'll throw Pinocchio in my honorable mentions too, just because I really like it. Just it's not my top yeah. 10. Sorry. Cade, what do you got for us?
Yeah. So when I was making my list, I was like going through like all the movies they had. I was like, yeah. damn, I haven't seen so many of these in so long. So it's like hard for me to rank them. And also, I'm just kind of going based off like what my favorites are, not like, oh, this movie's better than that. Cause I don't even know how the fuck yeah. you can like even say that.
It needs to be personal to you.
Yeah.
You're from a
and, like,
different generation.
No, you have different memories attached to these movies.
Exactly.
So this is my top 10. I'm starting off with a very underrated one, I think.
Okay.
We got Atlantis, The Lost Empire.
Wow.
Yeah. Very, very cool. You know, a little sci-fi action. Got some great side characters. There's a guy that is really obsessed with dirt.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
just hilarious.
Yeah.
They call him the mole.
Yeah.
You have disturbed the dirt.
Yeah, I like that. I like that movie, honestly.
Great stuff. Number 9, Chicken Little.
Wow.
Yeah. Because this is like, I watched this when I was growing up.
I haven't seen that in a long, long time.
Gotta watch it when you're high. Because, you know, like they're all animals and stuff, but they like will throw in adult jokes.
Yeah.
No, like a lot of them do.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's like you watch it when you're older and you just like pick up on those things and it just makes it even funnier. Number 8, got Peter Pan.
You
classic. Number 7, Lilo and Stitch.
Okay.
Another one that, you know, I grew up watching. Really loved that. Number 6, got Hercules.
Yes.
Again, great soundtrack. Great, like, it's all the things you mentioned earlier. Number 5, I don't know how you're going to feel about this one. I got Emperor's New Groove.
God damn it. Fucking Emperor Llama.
It's so great. Yeah, the mixing up the llama and the poison.
I'm not going to hate on it anymore. I just, they put it as in their top 5. I feel like Rolling Stone was doing the definitive list, not like one person's personal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For you, it's perfectly acceptable. For them, they should be ashamed.
But yeah, you mentioned Eddie Murphy as an all-time great like voice actor.
Yeah.
The dude that plays Kronk. Let me find his name. Patrick Warburton. Great, great voice actor. He also does Joe from Family Guy.
Oh, no
shit. I love his voice.
Oh, yeah, that dude's great. If you looked up his name, Patrick Warburton, and you see a picture of him, you'll be like, oh, yeah, that dude.
Yeah, so he's always great in that movie. Got Aladdin in number 4.
Sick.
Number 3, have Lion King.
Yep.
Number 2, we got Mulan.
Okay.
And then number 1, we're going with Tarzan.
Yes, dude.
And then again, strictly because, you know, the soundtrack just goes so goddamn hard.
I feel like there's a few in years from the generational divide that don't make sense to me, and that's okay.
Yeah. And then, again, the same for you.
Yeah.
Like, The Great Mouse Detective and the Sword in the Stone and Robin Hood. Like, I didn't grow up watching those movies. Not to say, like, they aren't, like...
Well, in fairness, they came out in 1963, 1986, and 1953.
They weren't really your
they weren't
generation.
Relevant.
Yeah, but like you also didn't have like...
We didn't have that many options when I was a kid. Now Disney cranks out like 5 fucking films a year, but well, that's not accurate either. But the point is, like, there was a select amount of these Disney movies when I was growing up, and so it was easier to work your way through the ones that were like literally 60 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see why you didn't make your way around to those.
But no, I think I need to go back and like... roll through some more of these Disney movies because it's been way too long.
Bro, we used to do this thing in college. I've said this on the show before, but me and one of my best friends, he lived in our fraternity house. And every Sunday, we would get incredibly high and watch a Disney classic. We did it every single Sunday for months, it feels like. I do remember one particular Sunday that, like, we would always invite girls over to watch with us. And one time we had... girls over, and one of the two girls brought edible, like, brownies that she had made edibles, though. This is before, like, you know.
You could now get them delivered.
Yeah, the weed industry hadn't been developed the way it is now, but, like, we had edibles that she made, brownies, and we all ate a brownie, and then, like, an hour and a half later, we were all, like, curled up on the floor crying because she fucked up and made them way, way, way too potent, and we were all miserably stoned for, like, 7 hours, and it was, like, it was the worst... weed experience I've ever had. Like, everybody who smokes has been too high at some point, and like waiting that time period for it to go away, for it to calm down is rough. But when you do it with edibles, it's much, much worse because it takes significantly longer for you to come down. And it was one of the worst experiences of my life that happened on a Disney Sunday. But that
what movie
said,
did you watch?
I don't know, bro. I don't have a clue what movie it even was. But it may have been Sword in the Stone, now that I'm thinking about it. Sword in the Stone, yeah. Yeah, I have a soft spot for the Disney films. I still watch them as a 36-year-old adult man and enjoy them.
Yeah, even when they come out with like new stuff, I'm like, all right, I'm going to sit down and watch this.
Yeah, it depends on what it is. Right. I mean, granted, but no, it's one of the things I'm stoked about as a dad. Like, as my kids get older, being able to watch all these with them is going to be super fun for me. So, shout out to Disney. Anti-shout outs to Rolling Stone.
Yeah. I'm surprised you didn't have, like, Frozen on your list.
See, it's just, like, not mine, though. It's, like, my stepdaughter's. Yeah. You know, it's like, I love Frozen. It's a great movie. I love Frozen. I love Encanto. I love Moana. Those are all awesome, awesome movies that I expect to be in her top 10.
Yeah.
But for me, they'd be somewhere in between 10 and 20 in my next 10.
Yeah.
Which we'll do next week. No, I'm kidding. We're done. That's it. We just needed to do our top 10s. That'll do it for today's show, but please support our sponsors by hitting the links in the description of this episode and using our dedicated codes. That's how we pay the bills here at Bowling Media. It means a lot to us when you support our sponsors. Again, you can find the links to all of today's sponsors in the description below. To check out our other shows, go to bowlingmedia.com. We've got Jared, J-Bone, Boris Lowe's F1 show, Formula Bone, which just closed out its second full season of F1 coverage, I believe.
Yep, they finished last weekend. I'm pretty
sure. Abu Dhabi was the last one, right?
Pretty sure Verstappen won again.
He did. Yes, he did. But Formula Bone will be around all off season as well with F1 coverage. Go to youtube.com/@FormulaBone and subscribe to support J-Bone. They also have audio versions of every episode on the podcast platforms. We've got Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, where we are covering Foundation on Apple TV Plus currently. But we'll be talking about a lot of other exciting stuff to close out the year, including Fargo Season 5. Then in January, we're going to pick up by covering True Detective Season 4, which we're extremely excited about. Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, available wherever you get your RBP. If you're a Houston sports fan, check out Banging the Can on youtube.com/@bangingthecan. Subscribe to our YouTube, by the way. Even if you're an audio person who just likes the Spotify or the Apple Podcasts or whatever, I appreciate you. But go to youtube.com/@TheRossBolinPodcast and subscribe there as well. Helps us out, helps us grow the show. And we're going to be doing some new and interesting things with YouTube going into 2024 that I'm excited for y'all to see if you are indeed a viewer. Hit bolinmedia.com/shop to grab yourself some RBP merch for the holiday season. Or, you know, let's say you've got a cousin who's super into sunsets. Just loves them. Buy him a Horny for Sunsets t-shirt. Say you've got a brother who doesn't know where to finish. Buy him a finishing cup. We've got all kinds of great merchandise. Shirts, baby onesies, mouse pads, puzzles, coffee mugs, and more at bolinmedia.com/shop. Go check it out today. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at WRBolin. Cade, where can the people follow you?
You can follow me on all the social media platforms at KDORIS. That's KADEORRIS.
This episode of RBP is presented by Bolin Media, and video of today's show, which is available in full on YouTube, was produced by KDORIS. Go to youtube.com/@TheRossBolinPodcast for full video of our show plus funny clips. We'll be back later this week with another ad-free exclusive episode of RBP available only on patreon.com/RossBolinPodcast, just like we are every single week. Get on Patreon, support the podcast. It's one of the main reasons we are able to do this show every week and keep RBP alive year after year. Patreon.com/RossBolinPodcast, where when you join to support the show for just $5 a month, you'll gain access to our entire backlog of like 200 ad-free exclusive episodes that have never been released publicly that are available only there on Patreon. Go today. And until next time, peace be with you. And also with you.
baby.